So I place the meeting to order and give the instructions as the manager to give instructions for submitting public comment during the meeting.
Right, so if folks are on the Teams call, they can either write in the chat box that they have a public comment, or under item four, folks can do it under that. And the chat box is on either the upper row or the lower row of your window, and it just looks like a little box with writing in it. That's the way to do that. And we've not received anything prior to the meeting in terms of public comment.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Could you conduct the roll call, please?
Yes. Commissioner Lieberman?
Here.
Commissioner Albert? Not here. Commissioner Audie?
Here.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Commissioner Aguirre?
Here. Great. Thank you. I'd like to ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
and to the Republic
for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, so...
Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to see if the commission would be agreeable to an agenda amendment that we move to closed session after public comment. I'd like to make a motion for that. The reason being, I am juggling multiple meetings today. I have another one shortly after 9 o'clock. And just depending on how long this meeting goes, I may have to leave in the middle. So I'm hoping we can do closed session first. I'd like to make that motion.
Okay, I have a motion by Commissioner Lieberman. Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Second, Commissioner Audie. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert? Commissioner Audie?
Yes.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. So now we will be moving into closed session. Is that correct?
Public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's do item four, public comment.
I'm sorry, public comment.
So if there's anybody who wants to make a public comment, you can unmute yourself and or write in the chat box.
Do you see any comments? Are there any comments there?
I have not. I don't hear anybody nor see any written comments in the chat box, so I presume no.
Okay. Then we will move into closed session.
Excuse me, Madam President, if I could make one statement prior to convening in closed session that's required under the Brown Act. It relates to item 9C of the closed session agenda. Pursuant to paragraph 2 of subdivision E of Government Code section 54956.9, the facts and circumstances supporting item 9C arise from Silicon Valley Clean Water's construction of the rescue program projects on a portion of property located on Skyway Road and owned by the City of San Carlos.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the procedures for going into closed session?
Yeah, so I would... let's see, those people who are scheduled to be in the closed session, press the red leave button on this Teams meeting and then rejoin under the closed session Teams invitation. Those folks that are not in the closed session can either remain on this call until we come back. We'll be rejoining, or you can hang up and then come back at a later time, although I would suggest staying on since we don't know when we're going to come back from closed session. So hope that's clear. And those folks that are on closed session, we can leave now and rejoin under the closed session invite. So see you shortly. You're back.
Great.
And I texted Mark, so he should be joining shortly.
And we're back.
Success.
Again.
Getting too good at this work.
Okay, do we seem to have everyone back?
Let's see. Yes, it looks like we are all here.
Through the chair?
Yes.
I hope whatever insurrection you were plotting while I was gone was successful.
Yes, we were fine. Thank you, Commissioner Olbert. Welcome. Great. Okay, if everyone's ready, and thank you for those that were waiting for us patiently, we are moving on to item 5, safety moments. The first item, item A5A, safety moments.
Yeah, so 5A is to plan your home fire escape. As you know, we're in fire season in California, and everybody hopefully has their go bag, and it's really good to practice how folks are going to get out of their house in case of an emergency or in case of something happens in their house. And this is a really good write-up, and they give you a little graphic that you can use for yourself and your household members. So that is a safety moment.
Great. Thank you for that. The manager's report?
I do not have anything beyond what's in the written, which is just a calendar of items that are, upcoming for the commission. So.
Excuse me to interrupt, Madam President. Before you continue with the agenda, can I give a report out after closed session?
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Just as to closed session items 9A through C, no reportable action was taken and direction was given to staff and council. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Gerald.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 5B, you were finished, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, item 5C, financial reports.
Yes, good morning. I don't have anything extra other than just to point out that there is a memo in there describing the expenditures for the fiscal year ended. Those are unaudited figures, but they do give an indication of how we finished the year. Just a slightly 2.5% higher than budget. Open to questions if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions for the commissioners?
Yes, through the chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I did have one question for Matt on 5C2.
Okay.
And by the way, first off, my earlier comment was meant for anybody who wasn't aware of the context, purely facetiously, simply because for legal reasons, the San Carlos rep was not allowed to participate in the closed session today, which was perfectly fine.
So, Matt, the quick question I had was, I just was curious about a little bit more color on the what caused PG&E to have to hit us with a $218,000 incremental bill, because it sort right. of made it implied, or it implied that they had lost some data, and the net result was we owed them more money. And I'm just trying to understand that.
Yes, that's exactly right. And there is, I believe, Arvin from engineering is on the phone as well. He can speak to the specifics. But there was a period of time during a construction project where we had 2 meters. We were switching over from an old switchgear to a new switchgear. The original meter was not being read, unbeknownst to us. They weren't billing against it. And after they went back and analyzed all of the data they captured, it turned out to be a very large retroactive bill. We had described this in the third quarter. We actually wound up paying this in the fourth quarter. But yes, unfortunately, it resulted in a retroactive billing of a sizable amount.
And essentially, I presume that staff concurs in the analysis that PG&E did.
We do. We went back. We did the comparative analysis to actually what our demand was for those same periods. They were consistent. The data does look to be accurate. We also, you know, discussed how can we going forward be more proactive when we notice these things, to analyze them the months that they occur, and to follow up sooner so there isn't such a large retro adjustment. Obviously, this was an unusual event, but we've done those two things. We know the data is accurate, and we have paid them and satisfied that bill.
Okay, great. Thank you for refreshing my memory.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item D, engineer report.
Hi, I have no comments beyond the written report for 5D.
Any questions from commissioners? Okay, thank you. Moving on to commission requested staff level action items.
Yeah, and this is just a accounting of what comes up in any particular commission meeting and then the status of progress being made on it. So there's nothing beyond the written report to speak of.
Thank you. The rescue program design build project status update.
Yes, hi. So I do have some comments to make on the report. Jessica, can you scroll down just to this front of plant? Thank you. That's perfect. So we've got some, a couple of months ago, I was reporting on the indices that we were using to report progress on the project, and said that we would be changing the values and the way we are trying to report to you how well we're doing on project progress, both in terms of cost and schedule. And so if you can see it on the bottom left, we've added these little speedometer figures to try to demonstrate how we're doing. And I wanted to go through a little bit on what these mean and so we've got two indices that we're using to measure, to demonstrate how we're doing on our projects. The top one is cost performance index, CPI, and that is basically, you know, a decimal where the it's the earned value of the contract work that is done so far, basically an estimate of the work that the contractor has done to date, and how much value they have put into the construction project so far. That's the numerator, and the denominator is how much we have paid the contractor to date. So we want that to be one, right? We don't want to have paid them for more than the actual work that they've done. And we put a lot of work into, you know, estimating the value of the work done to date and making sure that we are paying no more and no less than that value, that estimated value. So that's cost performance index. And the one below it is schedule performance index. And that is the same numerator, earned value, how much has the contractor earned in the work that they've done to date? And then the denominator is planned value. So if you remember the S-curve that I was showing, we at the beginning of a project and every time there's a contract change order, we plot out how much we will be spending over the course of the project. And we use that for, you know, math purposes for planning out, you know, when we think we will be spending significant amounts of money for the cash flow purposes. And then we also use that to measure, schedule performance. So again, we want that to be one. If it is less than one, if the schedule performance index is less than one, it means the project is behind schedule and we are paying out more slowly than we expected to. And then if it's higher than one, the project is ahead of schedule and we are paying out more quickly than we expected to. So those are the two indices that we have chosen to show and demonstrate progress on the project on these reports.
Through the chair?
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you. Kim, excellent addition. I apologize for not having noticed the addition because that, okay. Those are brilliant additions. So I compliment whoever came up with that and implemented it. Under the heading of, once you introduce a good idea, the consequences that people start coming up with all other things to look at or a number of other things to look at. Is there a way to do something comparable tracking against, I'll call it the original cost or the original estimated cost of a project? One of my perennial issues on the council and to some extent on Silicon Valley Clean Water is that as projects evolve over time, we adjust the budgets. And so it's kind of like, well, we're always on budget. And that's true. But it would help me kind of as a reminder to say, yeah, we're on budget. And by the way, the budget is 20% higher than what it originally was when the project was brought forward. Not to constantly critique it, but just as a reminder, okay, we have made adjustments in the past and we might want to, keep that in mind as we go forward. Is something like that possible?
It certainly is possible. My one question on that is when do we define the original budget of a project?
And yeah, what's T0, right?
Because these projects were originally conceptualized in 2008, and they had a budget back then, and we're certainly what we're spending is different from that.
Perhaps we use the budget that we entered into the agreements with the design builders.
That's a nice idea. Let me, so I don't divert the meeting. I wouldn't mind talking about this a little bit more offline, and I'm not asking that staff do anything right now. Again, I think these are great additions. It just sparked this other thought. As I mentioned, that's always been in the back of my mind that, we're always on budget. Well, yeah, right.
Right.
Okay. Understood. We're that good, Mark.
Yes, well, that's true too, but there's this other dimension to it.
Yeah.
Understood. Okay.
Thank you, Mark. Any other commissioner questions? Okay. Thank you, Kim. We will move on to.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. May I? Thank you, through the chair. On the pump station, I noticed that you were about 91%. I guess we're a little bit behind schedule. Just want to know, is that anything to be concerned about, and/or is there any major reason for it?
At this point, it's not something we're particularly concerned about. It's early in the project. We did expect at this point to have more construction activity than we have had up to now. We've been waiting on some easements and permits. We will, as the project continues, we'll, you know, continue to report out on whether this little bit of a late start will impact the ultimate end date for the projects.
Great. Thank you. As Commissioner Robert said, I think these are great additions and makes it easier for us to track with you and know when we need to ask questions.
Sure. Great.
Any other questions? I'm not hearing or seeing any, so we'll move on to item number 6, matters of commission members' interest. Are there any?
The chat, just a reminder that I will be leaving the meeting somewhere between 9 and 9:10 today, and just if you're in the middle of something, I won't interrupt, so I'll just log off at that point.
Thank you, Commissioner Lieberman. Okay, anyone else? Okay, moving on to item 8A.
We have to move into consent calendar.
Item, I'm sorry, 7. Did I skip that? Again. Item 7, consideration of motion approving consent calendar.
Through the chair?
Yes.
I have a question on 2 consent calendar items.
Okay.
Would you like me to make a motion for the other items, or just my questions are brief? I'd be happy to just ask them and then participate.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Okay, thank you. On 7A, 7C, which is the admin policy change, I just have a quick question about, not that I object to it, but what was the motivation for adding the ability for the commission to waive application of the policy? That's a was a red line change, I think, sort of towards the end, as I recall.
Sure. That item, I think, we'll discuss in more detail when we come to the refunding item. But what it does is, based on a unique circumstance where we may want to waive that ability, we'd like the ability to come and discuss those items rather than just saying, nope, never shall you do that. So it gives us just that flexibility, albeit with enough, I guess, credence from our municipal advisor and with permission of the commission to have that ability to waive it.
Thank you, Matt. I guess what was confusing me a little bit is I sounds like incorrectly had assumed that staff always had that flexibility. You know, that since we set all of our policies, that you could always come to us and say we'd like an exception to that policy.
Sure. Yeah. No. Just as background, this policy was developed just 3 years ago as we began to enter into some more significant debt items, and so we're learning as we go. And as I go through this, I'm like, oh, I would be remiss if we didn't at least consider that. So it's both informing myself and my successor someday to say, let's not handcuff ourselves. Let's keep an open eye towards what may be in the best interest of the agency and give the flexibility that we need to at least consider that.
Okay. I'll just thank you. The great explanation. I'll just leave sort of a general comment for Teresa. From my perspective, if there's ever anything in any of our policies that we've adopted that you need a special exception for, I, for one, have no problem with you bringing it forward. Because we always have to double apply judgment. Second question was on 7D as in dog. What I'm trying to make sure I understand is the investment horizon for the fund is 5 years. It's for pension related stuff, obviously. The horizon struck me, therefore, as being a little bit short. And what I'm sort of concerned about is, I want to be careful how I say this. Well, I am certainly not suggesting that we take on inappropriate risk. Mm-hmm. One of the whole points of having a longer term investment horizon, as you know, Matt, is that you ride out the ups and downs.
Right.
So I'm trying to understand the language about what's acceptable risk versus a 5-year time horizon. And to me, the horizon seems too short, or the risk language seems out of whack with it.
Yes. Well, let me do a couple of things. First, I'll introduce Ellen Clark. Ellen Clark is from PFM Advisory Group, and she can speak to some of the risk and volatility points that you're making. And I do agree with you that the horizon on this is certainly, in my mind, longer than 5 years. This is for pension. This is something we continue to contribute to. And it's for those employees who may, in fact, retire 20 years from now. So we want to keep that in mind. And I guess I'm surprised if it speaks to a specific 5-year horizon. I would like to address that if the language does say that. But while I'm looking for that, perhaps Ellen, can you make some comments as well?
Sure. Thank you, Matt. Good morning, commissioners. We do mention a time horizon in the time horizon of 5 years or longer. We do say that because typically when we're evaluating a program, we are looking at at least a 5 year horizon to look at the performance of a manager, and so that is referred to under the time horizon. We can lengthen that if you would like, but that's typically why we put five or longer in there.
Thank you. I had noticed that it actually says 5 years or longer. I didn't mean to imply it was a fixed 5 year. So my comment really is more along the lines, again, I'm not trying to encourage inappropriate risk taking, but I also want to make sure that we don't sort of arbitrarily restrict ourselves to a shorter horizon than perhaps we ought to be looking at, because that will cause us to go in for relatively low yield investments, which is not necessarily what we want to do in a long-term investment. Rather than, because I want to try and honor as much of Lauren's time as we can, I think, you know, you understand where I'm coming from. I don't know where my colleagues are, but I would just keep the or longer part in mind, please.
Will do.
I take it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on the consent calendar? If not, can I get a motion to approve?
Madam Chair, I move approval of the consent calendar.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Okay, seconded by Commissioner Uddy. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert?
Yes.
Commissioner Uddy?
Yes.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Yes. Okay, moving on to business items A.
Okay, this is Matt.
Okay, thank you. This is a discussion of refunding two series of bonds, the 2014 and the 2015 series, both of which were issued back when the economy was slightly different. And that's the big story here, is as the market conditions have changed, specifically in the last 6 months, interest rates have fallen. A lot of agencies or cities are taking advantage of these lower interest rates by refinancing outstanding debt to save themselves some money. And in our case, it's not any different. I will introduce on the phone, if there are specific questions, we do have Doug Brown from Stradling, our bond counsel, and we have Robert Poor and Laura Carpenter as well, who work for Fieldman Rolap, and that's the municipal advisory group that has been working with me for the past 5 years on these deals. So as the slides say, Jessica, can you just advance it as I talk? Sorry. The first slide talks specifically about the 2014 and some of the terms that are out there. The amount of money outstanding is $48 million. 2015, there's $62 million outstanding. And in 2017, there was a tax code change, and that tax code did not allow cities and organizations to any longer advance refund using tax-exempt debt. So that ability to advance refund early went away. You can still do it on a taxable rate. And so what that means is, despite being taxable, the bonds we would issue, it's still an economic advantage to do so. So on the next slide, we speak to the proposal. We see that the savings would be around $8.5 million net present value just by taking advantage of these lower interest rates. That works out to be about $520,000 in debt service reduction. So that's $520,000, and your share of that debt would go down commensurate with that. And then each one in each series, because they were priced differently, works out slightly different economics. You'll see $6 million of those savings comes from the 2014 deal. The 2015 deal, more recent, was at a better interest rate than 2014. So those savings associated are not as good as the 2014s. And that speaks to the next slide, which what we're asking to do, and this goes back to Mr. Olbert's earlier question, is that ability to waive certain things when we think we need to, is that the debt management policies today says we have a target of 5%. We're estimating those savings to be 11% for the 2014s, 3.5% or 3.8% for the 2015s. And that's the question, and that's the recommendation, is despite not achieving that threshold, we'd like to proceed with refunding both series. The reasons are listed on that, on those bullet points. Sorry, if you go back, it's the cash flow savings that are pretty obvious. We can lower the debt service payments. That lets us, the way that we have to comply with debt service and have some coverage of that, that lets agencies raise rates at a slower pace or not raise them as much to make up for that. But the biggest point in this is we are in the midst of negotiations with the State Water Resource Control Board on a sizable loan of $169 million SRF loan. The state has made it clear that they view these outstanding bonds, because those outstanding bonds have seniority over the state's debt, they're not happy about that, and they want to make it at parity. So far, initially they had said, we'd like you to have all of that done at parity and and recall that debt and do what you have to do. And we've negotiated, we think, to say, as economic conditions allow, we will refund those debts. And when we do so, the refunded debt would be made at parity with the state. That seems to be satisfactory to them, so that's what we're proposing. And in this deal, to have both of those series negotiated would go a long way, I think, to closing the SRF loan, which, you know, Doug Brown, who's on the phone, is in the midst of discussions with their legal counsel, and I think some progress has been made. Doug, did you want to comment any further on that?
No, I would just say, yeah, we have made finally some progress with the state on this. They've given up on some of their issues, including the most problematic one, as told to us by your staff at our last meeting, which was they wanted a rate covenant that was running off maximum debt service ever, 30 years out, as opposed to actual debt service. So they've agreed to change that. But as Matt said, they are insistent that these existing loans be refunded as quickly as possible in order to make the loans with the state on a parity with them.
Right. Thank you. So then moving on, there's one more point I think we wanted to make, and that was the negotiated bid process. So of the series that, I guess of all the bonds that the agency, SVCW, has issued, three of them, were done originally on negotiated deals, which means you select your underwriter, and then that underwriter helps you price and reach the market, and they sell the bonds at the best price they can get you. And those worked in 2008, 2009, and in 2014, we did the same. Fieldman Rolap, when they came on board, they made a quick observation and said, we think you can do better by having a competitive sale. At the same time, I like that competitive sound, and this, it's in our best interest to get the best deal we could. So we did that in 2014, did it again in 15, did it in 2015, 18, and most recently in 2019 with the notes we issued, all very successful. And they were pretty straightforward, new money deals, not a lot of complications, and it worked really well. This time around, we think we would like to propose a negotiated bid method. That's because of some of the complexities of a taxable. It's also because of the market as we're seeing it right now. It's somewhat volatile, and we want the ability to have an underwriter who can quickly respond to those changes in the conditions. So that is an ask in the resolution to make sure that we formally get authorization to proceed and put out the RFQ, the shortlist, and then ultimately an RFP to select the actual underwriter. And with that, there is a recommendation that is on the screen. And if there are any questions, we're happy to answer them.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, Commissioner Olbert.
Thank you. Matt, this must be my day for Matt questions. Sorry about that. The only element of this recommendation that I'm having a little difficulty with is, in fact, the last slide that you had, which if you could put back up or somebody could put back up, I would appreciate it. The I understand that we've done this process both ways, and we've been satisfied with the results both ways. My instinct is always go with the competitive process, except when there are, you know, what would you say, documented, clear, whatever reasons to, not to. I'm not quite grasping that here. I'm not quite grasping why I want to go negotiate it.
Sure. I may ask Robert to comment on some of that because he's closer to the market, closer to the underwriters and the desks that help with this. So Robert?
Yes. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Robert Poore, Executive Vice President with Fielman Rolapp and Associates. We've been the municipal advisor. Now, that's a very good question. One reason is just comparing the competitive market and how it works with, or excuse me, the competitive process with the negotiated process. Competitive process, you pick a date. It's fairly well in advance of the date you want to take bids. With the negotiated process, and so you're sort of locked in to taking bids on a certain date. And in this market, we've seen a lot of volatility, especially on the taxable side. Interest rates for taxable municipal bonds are based upon U.S. Treasury yields and rates. So it has been pretty volatile. It's been very choppy, we would say, clearly over the last 3 weeks or so. And so we want to build in flexibility to not just pick a date and accept bids. We want to be able to monitor the market and try and enter the market for the sale of your bonds at a date that is, we think is advantageous. And the underwriting desk, having selected an underwriter in advance, they're more attuned to market conditions and sentiment of investors.
May I interrupt you just to, because I think that's very helpful and clarifies for me the bid ask, if you will, on the different approaches. But the question I guess I have is, so it sounds like either the market dynamics are not such, or we're not a big enough issuer that we have enough leverage essentially with the underwriters to be able to say, to deal with the issue of volatility. It's like, hey, we want to pick not a date certain, but we want to want you to commit to any time during the week of November 8th. And I'm picking that number at random, you know, whatever the date is. Anytime during that 1 week period, we get to call you up and say, go. But you're saying we can't do that.
Yeah, this is Doug Brown, the bond counsel. No, the state statute requires you to pick a date, publish a notice, and you cannot take it earlier than that date. You are allowed to defer it, but I think Robert Poore would tell you, if you defer a previously scheduled competitive sale, the underwriters lose interest rapidly because they get the sense that you're not reliable.
Sure. Right.
Well, and the other advantage with negotiators is we can pick a date in our minds, and if we need to go sooner, we can go sooner. We can enter the market.
Okay.
A day or so in advance.
That's again, in the interest of time, that's answered my question. And I will probably take up, have a discussion with some of our state reps saying, given the volatility of the current market, it's like the last, maybe the state wants to think about tweaking that law, but that's a separate issue. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Olbert. Any other commissioners have questions?
Just one quick one. Matt, I just want to confirm that at least for Belmont, because Belmont did not participate in these bonds, for us, this is essentially it doesn't affect us so much on the refunding, although to the extent it enables the agency to get the state loan that you were mentioning, I forget the letters that you're using,
sure.
That's actually where Belmont will benefit something. Is that right?
That is correct. Belmont would participate in the SRF loan, would benefit from that, but this is more of a courtesy to the other members who participated in the original 2014 and 2015 issuances.
Great. So in view of that, Teresa, when you take a vote on this item, if you would call Belmont last, I will give my fellow commissioners the chance to weigh in fully before Belmont votes, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, not there is a recommendation.
Through the chair, I move approval of item 8A.
Okay, I have a motion.
Yeah, this is George, seconded.
Second. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Commissioner Olbert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audi?
Yes.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes, and thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item 8B.
Yes, and Kim will give this presentation.
Okay, so hi, thank you. Item 8B is the effluent pipeline leak repair emergency condition. So what I wanted to do, the effluent pipeline has been a problematic pipeline for SCCW and SBSA since the very beginning. It was actually, I believe, the very first contract after the plant was built was to fix the leaking effluent pipeline. And the reason for that is it's connected to it's a very large pipeline. It's connected to the building. The building is on piles and the pipeline itself is not on piles. So has experienced settlement, and we've had to go in there periodically and try to fix it and protect it from leaks. And so this emergency condition was due to a leak on the effluent pipeline, and we really wanted to make sure we don't have to go back in 5 years and try to fix it again, and focused on a permanent fix for this pipeline. So I'm just going to go through some pictures of the construction that we did. And these first pictures are the sheet piles that we drove in order to support the excavation. And it's a 63-inch pipeline, diameter pipeline, so it's a pretty big construction zone, as you can see. So after we drove the sheet piles, we put concrete caps on top of those sheet piles in order to support the roadway after we're done with construction. And then we started excavating the dirt. And a lot of the reason for the settlement is that it's pretty deep in the location where it is connected to the main structure. And the weight of all that dirt just pushes down on the pipeline and causes it to settle. And in the case of this HDPE pipeline, also caused it to kind of squish and become egg-shaped. So we're pulling all of that dirt off the top of it. And here's another cool picture of inside the excavation. Like, we excavated all the way down to halfway down the pipeline. So this is some work we did we had built a concrete box around the pipeline in order to try to support some of that soil in our previous attempts to secure this pipeline. We're pulling that off here, the top of the concrete box. We're pulling that off in this picture, in these pictures. And then here you can see we've exposed the pipeline. And this dirt didn't come back on top. So we've installed these, what are called whalers, and it's this, these I-beams that are gonna be supporting these sheet piles as well, and allowing us to cover up the top of this excavation, but not fill it up with dirt, so that if we experience settlement in the future, we can get down there. And also, we won't have the weight of all of that soil on top of the pipeline in the future. As I go, so this is some pictures of the support.
think she has.
I think she has frozen. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, there you are, Kim.
Am I back? Can you hear me?
You were frozen for a minute, yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. I occasionally run into bad network. So I'll kind of try to go here before you lose me. So these are some pictures of the site restoration. We covered the top back up and have paved over it, and it's acceptable for truck traffic. And there's the final pictures. And we've incorporated a way to measure if the pipeline is settling again before we, you know, experience a leak, before we have to kind of dig down to figure out what happened. We've incorporated a system to be able to see how many inches this pipeline has settled, if it in fact settles in the future. This is a picture of the straps that are being used to hold the pipeline in place. And in the future, if we experience settlement, we will be able to get down in there and actually tighten up these straps and basically pull the pipeline back into its proper elevation. Now I'm going too far. All right. So, as I said, you know, we've really think at this point, you know, we've got a really robust support system. We've got piles 100 feet down, all the way down to the Old Bay Clay, that are supporting the pipeline at this point. And as I mentioned, we've got the ability to adjust that pipeline if a settlement occurs in the future. So I wanted to talk a little bit about we are asking for authorization for some additional budget for this project. Since this was an emergency project, it was a conceptual design that we had at the time that we requested the emergency authorization. As we got through the design of the project, as we got the geotech and the structural engineers involved, basically everything got bigger and beefier, and coatings. We decided to use the highest performance coatings that we could in order to be able to support this pipeline, you know, for the next 50 years. And so our costs did go up a bit from what was originally estimated. So the recommendation is to terminate the emergency condition on this pipeline and approve additional expenditures up to $250,000. We don't think we'll need the entire $250,000. We are actively in discussions with the contractor. And then the second item is to accept the construction project. And I can take any questions.
Thank you, Kim. Any questions from my colleagues?
Through you, Chair.
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you. Great report, Kim. One little kind of a side comment, having nothing to do directly with this item, but something I would just ask Teresa and the team to think about. Since a lot of people are working remotely now and have to, at least for part of the time, Kim's network connections, if, you know, I'm not necessarily adverse, depending on what the cost of it is, to the authority investing some additional money in connections to people's homes or wherever they're remotely working, just to make sure that we can reliably talk to them. So I'll leave that up to you guys to follow up with as you wish. Question I have, the project and the whatnot looks fine to me, and the additional money. I know I raised this when the emergency was first declared. Clearly, you know, things happen, and we clearly had one view of what it was like to have this line and other things in Young Bay mud at the time we did the original modifications. And we've since learned that, at least in this one case, it didn't work out the way we expected it to. So my question is,
what have we learned, and what process have we or are we going through to take what we've learned and look at other aspects of the plant, up to and including what would happen if there were a major earthquake, and you know, think about what changes we may need to make elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. I can, so on this specific pipeline, I would say that, you know, the surprising element of what happened to create this emergency condition was we had the expectation that the Young Bay mud had consolidated significantly over the last 40 years, and that we didn't expect the amount of settlement that we saw, just based on the fact that we'd already experienced a lot of settlement in this area over the years and had to continuously fix the pipeline. And what the geotechnical engineers have assumed has happened is the last time we went in to fix this pipeline, we drove piles in order to support the excavation. You know, I mean, that's in order to dig down and figure out what happened to the pipeline, you have to, in this type of soil, you have to put in sheet piles to support the excavation. And so in doing that, in driving those sheet piles, the impact on the Young Bay mud meant that it kind of restarted the clock, so to speak, on the consolidation that would happen. So a lot more consolidation happened than we had expected, based on that phenomenon. So we definitely, and so that's why we kind of went through this belt and suspenders almost literally on this project to support this pipeline. And on all of the pipelines that we're putting in on the project now, we're certainly learning from this lesson and taking into account how to support these pipelines without, you know, and trying to avoid this situation. So, for example, the pipeline that we're putting in right now for associated with the FOP project, a large portion of that pipeline is going to be pile supported. And so we're, you know, always trying to balance the cost because it costs a lot of money to drive 100 feet piles into the ground. But also, you know, understanding based on our experience that money spent right now is worthwhile. So
thank you. That's very helpful. And I appreciate the objectivity of it. And I'm glad staff has been thinking through that stuff. My non-technical takeaway from that, from what you said, was it is possible to restart the clock, to trigger additional settlement in ways that we didn't initially anticipate, that's part of the learning process. I guess I would ask staff, if you haven't already, to think about that more broadly, not just about construction projects, but what other things could violate the assumption of, hey, this mud's been around here for a long time, it should be fairly heavily settled. Which was sort of my comment about, you know, earthquakes and stuff like that.
Sure.
So I'll leave it at that. And it just, you know, I don't want to spend more money, any more money than you do. But on the other hand, I don't want the plant to go down either. I know you do,
right.
too. But,
right, so. Right. Agreed. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioners? So, Kim, I really appreciate all the pictures. Thanks. It gives us such a good view of what's happening. So talking about the mud that's settled, why are we still calling it young if it's old mud, right?
Well, in geologic terms, it's young, I suppose.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. If there's no other questions, I'd like to see if there's a motion for the term, recommendations 1 and 2. Can we take these together, Christine? I assume we can.
So, I believe we can.
Okay.
I my apologies. I was on mute. Yes, you may, Madam President. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, can I get a motion?
Through the chair, I move approval of items I and double I on item 8B.
Okay, can I get a second?
Commissioner Oddie seconded.
Okay, roll call, please.
Okay, it appears Commissioner Lieberman has logged off, so I will skip him. Commissioner Olbert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audie?
Yes.
Commissioner Iguari?
Yes. Thank you. Great. Moving on to item C, 8C.
Right. So this is another finance item, and this is to do with the WIFIA loan agreement that we entered into back in 2019. And you'll see on the next slide, we did have or do have the ability to reset the interest rate. So this is a unique ability. We only have it because at the same time we entered into the WIFIA loan agreement with the EPA, we also issued 2019 interim notes. And those notes act as construction dollars or construction loan. We use those notes at a 1.1% yield or so. So we have very cheap construction money. And at the end of construction, we would draw from the WIFIA loan and pay off the notes. So in the interim, we haven't drawn anything from the EPA, which allows us to go back to them and say, hey, original 2.4% interest rate was good at the time, but now we can do better. We've demonstrated we can do better. And they have agreed, and they've done this for a few other agencies, they've agreed to allow us to reset that interest rate based on current market conditions. And as you see here, those savings are significant. The debt service payments, when they become due in 2027, 2028, they may lower our debt service by as much as almost $2 million a year. So we're very happy about this. We want to move quickly and take advantage of the market while it's still low. So the recommendation is to proceed with authorization to execute and deliver the amendment with the EPA and get a new interest rate in place. So pretty short presentation, but thank you for your time and any questions I hope I can answer.
Good news. Questions?
Through the chair?
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you. Matt, I couldn't let you go because, you know, without a question, because I think I had a question on everything you have here today.
Awesome.
And I'm confident that you have anticipated my question, so I really am just curious as to your thinking, which is this type of option, which is great, and I'm glad that you're staying on top of it to bring these things forward. It's always a market timing question. So, you know, might we be better off waiting till next spring when interest rates go down -5%? How are you assessing that, and what encourages you or makes you believe that now is a good time to get us to approve this?
Right. I will always take the bird in the hand. That is certainly true for me. And I'll also defer to, you know, Robert Poor and what other agencies have done. And we have seen other agencies moving to take advantage of this, you know, and for the last 5 or 6 years, we've had the pleasure of saying, you know, we're at all time lows on interest rates, and they have continued to improve. And now we are seeing, you know, a 1.24, I think, percent treasury rate that would allow us to get this loan. It's a remarkable savings. So I will gladly take this. And if we lose a few basis points, I don't think we'll lose as much as we're gaining right now. So for that reason, I would say lock this in. And Robert, I don't know if you have any other market inside knowledge to offer.
No, other than, you know, we expect the treasury market to be somewhat volatile up until the time of the election and perhaps thereafter. And I think that's the commissioner's question too. But, you know, we like to abide by the bird in the hand approach. Is significant savings. You never know where the market's going to be in a couple of weeks, let alone a few months. So that's our recommendation. And also from EPA's perspective, if the authority were to spend down additional proceeds where they were beyond a certain point,
that's true. Yeah.
You would not be able to reset the interest rate.
That's very good point.
There's a shot clock on this that expires at some
yes.
point.
Yeah, we think this, you know, moving forward with all due speed and trying to get this reset accomplished quickly is advantageous for the authority.
Right. They've asked us to demonstrate that spending through the end of September. I think we're okay through the end of October, but beyond that would be a little too close for comfort in terms of the ability to achieve those conditions that the EPA requires by statute. Well,
that fine. Thank you. That actually basically says the window is very short, and we'd be arguing about whether it's this week or next week, and that's not an argument that I would ever want to have because it's ridiculous. Right. Okay, fine. Looks like a great idea.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, I think we have gone through the agenda and...
Right, we need a motion and a second on this.
I'm sorry. Correct.
Madam Chair, I move approval of item 8C.
Second. We have a motion, Commissioner Albert, and second, Commissioner Audi. Roll call, please.
Okay, Commissioner Albert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audi?
Yes.
Commissioner Guerri?
Yes.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. And I do want to just commend Matt on, this is just a brilliant move that he did in issuing the interim notes and so that we could have this opportunity with EPA and RFIA. So, very good job.
I would definitely second that. And, you know, all I can say, unfortunately for Matt, he's established a track record where the first time he doesn't do something truly brilliant, we're going to have to go after him for that.
Right. Well, at that point, it will be the consultant and advisor's fault, so that's okay.
Touché. Well played.
No, seriously, thank you to Robert and Laura, as well as Doug Brown, who have been hand-in-hand really helping, and they strategized on this from the beginning. So that's been a big help to the agency and worth every dollar we paid them.
Great. Thank you. I hope there's some way that we can share some of this news with our ratepayers in a sense that they understand that we are really looking out for their money.
Once this is complete, we'll get word out.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, everyone. Okay, any other questions? If not, I would get a motion to adjourn.
Move adjournment.
Seconded.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I don't think we need a roll call for that one. Oh. Everyone stay safe. It's good to see everyone, and we will see you next month.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you.